Well, I see that the time change didn't disrupt too many people's schedules, and I'm grateful. This morning at 10 o'clock, I was at the cathedral for the first Mass of the newly ordained Father John Paul Lewis. And it was, for me, a very personal experience since I baptized him 26 years ago, just about this time. And his mother and father were married there and were parishioners at St. Thomas More during the time I was there as well. In fact, if you remember how the seating there used to be, the priest sat among the people in the larger chair, and little Katie would on occasion break loose from mom and dad and come and sit in the big chair with me. And it always kind of looked kind of family-like, which is the way it should be. You know, today we pick up Luke's take on the Great Mission. Last week we had Mark's version of this. Today there is a shift of focus from Israel and the Jews, which is where they were sent. Remember, just go to the Israel and the Jews, do not go to the Gentiles. Today there's a shift to a wider mission that bears more resemblance to the mission of the church after the resurrection. The 72 mentioned here today is our clue to this universality, because it reminds everyone who's steeped in the book of Genesis that the descendants of Noah were 72 in number, meaning that's everyone who was left over after the flood. Okay, so choosing the 72, that's an important number, connects that with everybody. Luke's anticipating the mission to all the nations that began after Pentecost and Easter, when people of every nation under heaven, that's what it says in Acts 2, people of every nation under heaven gathered in Jerusalem on that Pentecost to hear the apostles' proclamation. What happens today is that the 72 become apostles. There is, between these two, as I said 2 weeks ago, there are disciples who are students and apostles who are preachers. Luke is making a point with the numbers. The 12 apostles have consistently represented the 12 tribes of Israel. No longer is this a chosen few sent only to the house of Israel. Now everyone, 72, now everyone is sent into the harvest so that God can fill all of us with good things. So Luke is unfolding for us the universal vocation of everyone who's come to faith in Jesus Christ. And there's work to be done. And we're sent to take up a share in that mission, reaping the harvest. We're sent with the bare essentials, thinking, as we always do, it's not enough. Thinking that we're not ready. Maybe later, after we've studied more, learned more, prayed more, or whatever. Thinking that we don't know enough and that maybe we can't do a good enough job. But because this is God's work, God's going to provide the resources. Success is not the issue. The going and the doing is the issue. Forget about whether or not you're successful. Just do it. We can't become a passive group of stay-at-home people and be part of the mission that identifies us as belonging to Christ. We are charged as church to proclaim the kingdom and offer God's peace to all. That's the first step of the mission. Peace. Where people long for comfort, you extend the touch of assurance. Where people are afraid, you sit with them and defy the darkness and the fear. Where people look for hope, you bring the light of Christ. Where people are bound by ignorance, you set them free with the truth. Where people are anxious and burdened with the things of this world, you share your joy and the freedom with the things that God provides. This is what proclaims the kingdom, this kind of behavior. It takes patience. It takes obedience. It takes openness to the will of God. And it takes vision of the long-range view and the wisdom to remember that in the long history of creation, we haven't been here very long. We're just getting started. When sent to announce peace, as this reading concludes, we touch the heart of the message that we have to share and the truth. Peace was the first announcement of Christ's coming. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Remember what the angel sang? That's the first announcement. His life among us brings Jesus to reach across every barrier with the simple gestures of acceptance and speaking the truth. He showed us what divine peace is all about. It's the healing of division and the unity of all creation. The very word, shalom, describes wholeness. The Hebrew word literally describes the mending of a net, the repair, the fixing of what's broken. You see, it has to do with putting back together what's been broken. As Jesus used the word, it was a greeting that announced that he was there, present in their midst, and that the relationship he had with the apostles was not broken by death. That's why when he came into that upper room, he said to them, shalom. In other words, we're back together. We're not broken. They are to announce by the greeting of peace that Christ is there. As Jesus will say later in Luke's gospel, as the Father sends me, so I send you. We are to continue the peacemaking of Christ. But this is not a patching up of things broken. It's not gluing things back together, and it's not arranging a settlement with concessions by all. It's not trying to find a compromise either. The peace of Christ is real peace. The peace of Christ has to do with the truth of who we are and who we are in God. It isn't something negotiable. It's God's gift to those who are open in faith to the tranquility of God's love and God's presence. And it is achieved and accomplished when we enter into that magnetic pull of God, of God's unity and God's love. The peace comes from our oneness with God. Sin which breaks us away from God is over, forgiven, undone. We are at peace. All the world's attempts at peacemaking in the end are futile. And they're always going to break down when we have not found our peace with God and entered into God's love and unity. Without peace with God, disciples like us will have no peace to share. But that's our mission, peace, unity with God, which eventually means unity within the human family who call God a father. Let us pray.